I'm Melissa Harris Perry. Thanks for being with us on The Takeaway as we continue our discussion of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The core motivation behind the violence we saw a year ago is a belief in the big lie, that self-serving falsehood perpetrated by former President Trump himself that the 2020 election had been stolen.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us.
Now, to guide us through some of the implications of this big lie, we return to Professor Hassan Kwame Jeffries, Associate Professor of History at The Ohio State University. Now, in full disclosure, I've known Professor Jeffries since we were both doctoral students at Duke University more than 20 years ago. And at that time, I think we both saw ourselves as inheritors of a Black radical intellectual tradition whose central feature has been critique of the American political project. So I wondered if Professor Jeffries was surprised to discover that we are now among those who are defending the legitimacy of the American electoral system.
The reality is that those of us, scholars who have spent our professional career studying the past, but even just Black folk intuitively, right, who have understood with a factual-based skepticism and recognized and experienced the shortcomings in American democracy, can also recognize when the darn thing was working, right? I mean, so it's not that we don't know, or so the wool has been pulled over our eyes. We know what disenfranchisement looks like. We know what voter suppression looks like. And we know, as both scholars and people of color and folk who have been victimized by a long history of disenfranchisement, that it still was in operation, right? I mean, people participated despite the attempts to suppress the vote. And so it really is, you know, the folk who are complaining about voter fraud, I mean, it's creating these solutions in search of a problem that doesn't exist. And so that is part of the great irony. And I think why January 6th needs to be taught and taught honestly, because it's based on this lie that there was massive voter fraud, that there was massive disenfranchisement in some way, shape or form, and cheating and stealing. And that just didn't happen. It just didn't happen.
Professor Jeffries also pointed to another important feature of Black political history that stands in stark contrast to the violence initiated by the big lie. Hope.
Despite the hell that Black folk have caught in this country for 400 years, we have never sought to overrun the Capitol. But we have acknowledged and said, you know what, there is something here that can be built upon. So there's been, I wouldn't say an optimism or even a faith, but there's been a hope, there's been a sense of humanity that despite how rigged this thing, despite how awful this thing is, we can make something of it. It is both shocking and disturbing that those who have benefited the most from this system would turn on it the way they did. And so I think there is something to be said by the hope that Black folk have and the belief that Black folk have in turning something good out of what really has been horrible and set up to be horrible and not to benefit people of color, Black folk, Native American folk, Latino folk. And still, that's the hope. That's what Americans don't get. Like, if y'all would just listen to Black people, just listen to Black women, right, we'd be in a much better place, because that is the hope that carries people. That's the hope that has made this a more expansive democracy. So on the one hand, you got Black folk who are rallying around hope and saying, look, it's far from perfect, but it can be better if you invest. White supremacy doesn't allow you to do that. White supremacy is all or nothing. And that's what those folk were rallying around, this belief in white supremacy. It's either everything for us or nothing at all, or we're going to burn it down.
Hope. Black folks' tenacious, collective insistence that America can and must embody her highest ideals and her most soaring aspirations. This is the hope we heard from Elizabeth Alexander's inaugural poem in January 2009, when President Obama first took the oath of office.
Say it plain, that many have died for this day. Sing the names of the dead who brought us here, who laid the train tracks, raised the bridges, picked the cotton and the lettuce, built brick by brick the glittering edifices they would then keep clean and work inside of.
This is the hope echoed by inaugural poet Amanda Gorman in January of 2021, when the insurrection was quelled and power peaceably, if painfully, passed to President Joe Biden.
And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us.
So I asked Professor Jeffries if he's feeling hopeful. After all, for him, January 6th was not just a political crisis or a historic occurrence. It was a deeply personal day. Professor Jeffries is the younger brother of Representative Akeem Jeffries, who represents the 8th Congressional District of New York and serves as chairman of the House Democratic Caucus.
It got really personal really quick, not only because, you know, my brother's a sitting member of Congress, as you pointed out, was there, and I couldn't reach him. And so as the shock of what was happening became clear and that this is a really dangerous situation, I mean, I was worried, you know, just in general for the fate of the nation, but also, is my brother going to be okay? And thankfully he was. You know, I was able to reach him eventually. But just as I was able to reach him, then I start receiving these death threats connected to him, saying that we have people outside of your house and we're watching this and make sure your brother stops this and the other. And I'm, you know, my brother still owes me a Thanksgiving meal or something, you know, for taking that flack on. But I don't know what's happening, right? So I got to gather my family together and leave the house because, you know, you're showing pictures of my house, right? Like, what is happening here? So then next thing you know, I got the Capitol Police calling me. I got the FBI calling me, right? Saying, hey, we're going to investigate this. You know, the special agent calling became my best friend, right? Like, we're going to send somebody out outside your house and all this. You know, Melissa, a week in, I was like, you know, I got cops driving by waving at me. So then they promised to catch the guy. I'm like, how are you going to catch this guy? You know, who are these people? But they catch the guy, right? And then he gets sentenced to 3 years, right? Because it wasn't just me and my family, right? I mean, he was targeting these other people. And the judge was like, yo, you're getting 3 years. He got 3 years for this. So in the end, there was a modicum of justice in that sense. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. But it is a traumatic experience because, you know, I got to explain to my daughters, why do we have to leave? And this is connected to what's happening on January 6th. But it's the reality. Like, look, when in American history have black folk ever been safe? All right. Especially when we're talking about these questions of political violence and politics and democracy. So it was a lesson in, you know, what does it mean to participate in the political process? But it also shows the potential impossibility that there can be accountability, there can be justice. But it also needs to be in the classroom a conversation about accountability and justice. Who should be held accountable for this? Is it just the individual, you know, who's animated by this white supremacy and sending threatening messages to people? Or should it also be the people who are galvanizing this, who are purposefully perpetuating these lies? And should they be held accountable? And what does justice look like in that regard as well?
Indeed, what does justice look like? And who else must be held accountable? Thank you to Professor Hassan Jeffries, Associate Professor of History at The Ohio State University.